Welcome everyone to this week's episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined with Seth Wintraub. How are you, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Great. So as usual, we're going to do a quick recap of all the EV news that we covered this week. And the week basically started with the comments from Elon Musk on his 60 Minutes interview that was that aired on CBS this week. And a little bit of controversy around it, mainly about his comments on the SEC and the settlement with the SEC. Well, first off, he was like, I mean, he literally said, I have no respect for the SEC, which is probably not the best thing to do when you were just investigated by them. But then, what gathered more controversy around that is the way that he's kind of handling the punishment that was part of the settlement, mainly the fact that he's been removed as chairman of the board. So some people are disagree on the significance of him not being chairman anymore. Some people say that it doesn't mean anything, it doesn't mean much at least. And from what we got from Elon so far, he seems to be in that camp because he joked about removing all his title at Tesla and nothing changed. So it seems like that. But other people says that Robin Denholm, Robin Denholm, who was on Tesla's board and is now the chairwoman of Tesla's board, she replaced Elon Musk. Some says that she's now here to try to control him and try to manage his erratic behavior. But in the interview, in this 60-minute interview, at least what was heard was Elon saying that... Well, the interviewer, I don't know her, apparently she's a...
Yeah, she's like famous, Leslie Stahl, TV she's been around forever, she's pretty important, I guess.
Leslie Stahl? She's famous in the U.S. set?
Yeah, she's quite famous.
All right. So she asked him, did you handpick her? And in the interview that was here, so saying that you handpicked your replacement... that was forced on you by the SEC sounds bad, of course. And in the interview, he just responded yes. But we ended up obtaining the full transcript of what was said during that part of the conversation. And what he actually said was yes, handpicked her. Well, I asked for a chair, and the rest of the board was really supportive of that. So. Like, there's a big difference with just yes and that kind of response here, which is still yes, but there's some nuance to it. But
I mean, there's a lot of nuance to it. In fact, I think he was kind of correcting himself.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, yes, but, you know, handpicked her? Well, I don't know if I handpicked her. Like, you know, I asked the board.
Yeah, and, some very creative editing, I think, is... wasn't
yeah I mean, and important stuff like I don't know why they like what's the importance of keeping it so, you know, if you're gonna have like sound bites, that's fine, but like at least put out somewhere the full transcript or the video.
Well some people had some because we're gonna go into an even like more blatant like misleading anything in a second, but some people had a good point that the fact that Elon like gave them hours of interviews apparently for the show. And it's called 60 minutes, but the segment was 14 minutes. That's normal for the show. Like, the show is 60 minutes, but they have, like, smaller segment. I don't watch the show.
Yeah, there's a lot of commercials and a lot of, like, tick, 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 tick of the clock.
All right. So, yeah, it was just 14 minutes. So, of course, if you give them, like, hours of stuff and you're going to condense it into 14 minutes, there's going to be some pretty huge cuts there. But, yeah, it was still misleading, and it was still clear that they had a narrative that they wanted to push. And they did push it like quite successfully. But so what happened next is that after he asked, is she going to be controlling you? And Musk laughed it off, basically said, no, it's not realistic. Well, again, that's what haired. It's not realistic in the sense that I am the largest shareholder in the company. I can just call for a shareholder vote and get anything done that I want. But this, they cut that scene. Like, they cut from us, they cut to her, so they could really change the way he said that. And So when we first saw the interview and I wrote an article about it, my point was that that's not really true. I mean, he is definitely the largest shareholder and he has a lot of control over anything that they bring to a vote. But he doesn't have like the majority of the stock, so he cannot pass anything. And sure enough, when we got the full transcript and we posted it, what he actually said is, I'm quoting, "I mean, that's not realistic because I am the largest shareholder in the company and a very high percentage of our shareholders support me and the company. So essentially, I could just call for a shareholder vote and get anything done that I want, provided that I could get the support of at least one third of the other shareholders, which is likely. At the end of the day, the shareholders control the company." So the rest of that quote was extremely important. In the edited version, they made it sound like some kind of like control freak who thinks he has full control over Tesla to someone who's has a very good understanding of his position within Tesla as the largest shareholders and as having a huge support among other large shareholders and also individual shareholders who put together have some kind of impact on a potential shareholder vote. So big difference here. That was quite something when I
got it's hard to believe that the editors didn't see value in that
last piece part.
I mean, it changed changed the whole meaning of the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the whole thing, like the whole segment, made it sound like Robin was basically just a puppet that they put in place, and now Musk has full control over, or still has full control over the board and Tesla. And another thing that wasn't the full transcript but didn't make the cut in the show was Musk having actually very good words for Robin and basically even turning things around on this SEC settlement, which again he did say that he has no respect for the SEC, so he didn't like that the SEC came after him and the company, and he thinks that there was no value in that. But he did say that the fact that he's stepping down from the role of chairman actually might be positive, because Robin, who was just on the board and part-time because she has like an important full-time position at Telstra, the big telecom in Australia, and now she's quitting that role to be at Tesla as a chairwoman full-time. So you're adding like an experienced executive full-time on Tesla's board, which I think, I can see why he would see value in that. But yeah, so we didn't get some, even though we had to pry it from CBS, from the 60-minute show, I think there was still some value in the overall interview there that they posted. But then moving on, we can talk a little bit about what I think was is going to be extremely important in the next few weeks is Tesla's usual end of the year push for deliveries and sales. So it's something that, I mean, if you've been,
and this year it's bigger than most years in the U.S. because of the tax,
for sure. The end of the tax credit, yeah, for sure. But I mean, if you guys have been following Tesla for a while, you know that at some point Elon Musk was talking about ending those end of the quarter push, because I mean, it's inevitable if you deliver like 30-50% of your cars in the last 2 weeks of the quarter, yeah, the quality is going to go down. the quality of the service, the quality of delivery, it's going to go down. It's inevitable. You cannot just put that kind of work volume on the same staff on a sort of short period of time. And at some point in the earnings, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, recognized that, admitted it, that it was not ideal, and said that it would work to try to smooth things out so that they could just deliver more steadily throughout the quarter and not that have that big of a end of the quarter push. But that hasn't really, there was like one quarter that it did work, but not consistently since. And now, like you said, there's just no way that it's going to work this quarter because of like the people just rushing to try to get cars from Tesla by the end of the year in the US, because the cars are going to be automatically $3,800 more expensive next quarter due to the federal tax credit phase out. And they did change some policies in order to optimize that first off, like, there's still some inventory that you guys can buy in the US if you want to. And in order to incentivize those sales, Tesla ended up extending the referral program by a week. It was supposed to end on the 10th. Now it's ending on the 17th. So that's just for people to still push the program and still get the six new buyers still get the 6 months of free supercharging. So they push that to facilitate some end of the quarter sales. Also, a cancellation wait list. So like I said, there's some inventory cars still for sales for sale, but all the custom orders, of course, have been full. Well, the original deadline was November 30th, but I think Tesla pushed them a little bit, right?
Yeah, and it depends on where you are, too. I think if you want to pick it up at the factory, you can still order a custom.
Yeah. And, so they did put a cancellation wait list now. So you can still custom order, be put on the wait list, and try to get the car by the end of the year. If you don't get the car by the end of the year, Tesla will reimburse you fully, which is pretty cool. Some sources within Tesla's retail operations says that there's still some markets with inventory vehicle, and Tesla hasn't released also all their displays and test cars and loaners, something that they usually do at the end of a quarter in order to just to boost sell. So you get, once Tesla does that, they can release like thousands of cars real quick, and that also ends up at the not thousands, but like definitely hundreds. Yeah, maybe thousands. Like between the test vehicle, the loaners, the display cars, and Tesla is now over 100 retail locations in the U.S. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, basically Tesla wants to be at zero inventory on December 31st.
Yeah, exactly. Well, zero inventory of finished cars in the U.S., right, basically. And so they were told to expect to that Tesla going to release that in the next week or so. So keep an eye out for that if you're on the market for one. So that's pretty much it. But speaking of like the delivery push, was also Tesla launched a new retail offensive this week to try to handle that kind of new volume. 11 new retail locations open in a week, all in the U.S., 4 in California, 2 in Texas, which is surprising since, well, those are not stores, excuse me. Those are galleries because, of course, sales of Tesla vehicles are still illegal in the great state of Texas due to some barbaric, basically, whole laws that don't make sense anymore.
And some lobbying by the auto dealers.
Yeah, including our good old Warren Buffett, who owns a ton of dealerships in the great state of Texas. And a few other states too that got new stars, including New York. New York getting a new star. Weren't they full on their limit of stores?
Just realized that now. They apparently got some. There's also one opening in near the Mount Kisco location, because obviously nobody's able to buy them in Connecticut. So all the Connecticut people come to Mount Kisco, and Mount Kisco is like way over full. So there's another one in, I can't remember the name of the town, but it's pretty close to, it's southern Westchester.
So Tesla did get an extension, like they can get new stores because they were stuck at 5, and that was the issue. And now Garden City, New York, where is that Garden City?
Oh, Garden City, that's different than the one I'm talking about. I guess they must have gotten something.
Yeah, if there's two more.
They're opening at least two more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's possible that they're opening service centers and not actual dealerships.
Well, those are our stores. So because that's the thing that we noted in our article about it, because there's a focus on malls. Those are not like dealership-style Tesla stores, which Tesla is a mix of malls and dealership-style locations. Right. And they have, like you said, service centers. Those are all retail locations inside malls, like large malls, which is something that an approach that Tesla had for years now that they sort of emulated from Apple, really, from Apple's retail strategy. And at first they focus on like those high end malls with like the Louis Vuittons and all the very high-end brands. And now they went down to like more regular, still in the high, higher brackets, really, of the mall spectrum, if you will. But
they're selling a different car now. They're selling the Model 3.
So yeah, but it's still next to the Apple stores or something like that.
Right.
So it's not like a strip mall or anything like that. But yeah, so it's something of note. But yeah, we're gonna need to check out on the New York situation because that's interesting. Another interesting stuff. We got some of an update or more of a confirmation on the timeline for the Tesla pickup truck, which we've been pushing for Tesla to unveil that thing as soon as possible in order to like kickstart the market for the electric pickup trucks in the US, which I think is going to be important for the American automakers to get behind. I think the Rivian unveiling last month did a lot in that direction.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah. So it's not that big of a deal now anymore, I think, because I think Tesla would have a much bigger impact because they already were very disruptive in other segments. So they have credibility when they unveil a new car now, that a new vehicle, in this case a pickup truck. They have credibility to bring that to market and say, oh, it's going to be something disruptive in this segment. Rivian doesn't have that as much, but I mean, we can all agree, I think, that we were very impressed by the specs and the vehicle themselves that they unveiled.
Yep.
So we've been pushing for them to unveil it as soon as possible. We were talking about maybe one more thing at the Model Y unveiling, which is supposed to be in March. Now Elon confirmed that he's aiming to unveil the prototype of the pickup truck next year without any specific timeline. So we should at least see it next year. And when we see it is generally when they open reservations too. So that's good. But next year can mean at the same time as the Model Y, can mean at the end of the year, or maybe the Model Y is going to come at the end of the year too, because they've been talking about maybe releasing it, unveiling it closer to production. And now we know that production is the aim for summer to end of 2020.
Have they talked about if the pickup truck was going to be based on the Model 3 chassis or anything like that?
No, I think it's going to be a big one. It's going to be closer to a Tesla Semi chassis, really.
Okay.
He was talking a big truck, like a 6-seater truck with a big bed and 400 to 500 miles of range.
So it's not going to be cheap. So we're not talking about a Ford F-150 competitor.
I doubt it.
We're talking about a Suburban competitor.
Probably more like that, yeah. And there was, of course, the famous comment now about the Tesla pickup truck being really futuristic looking, cyberpunk like, Blade Runner like, which, of course, there's a lot of debate of what that really means in terms of a pickup truck, because there's a few designs of vehicles in the Blade Runner universe, but not really one that matches with what most people would have an idea of what a pickup truck would be in 2020. We did that already. Oh yeah, we got some cool news from Tesla in Model 3 in Europe. So the timeline has been quite clear now that Tesla is trying to push start a production in January for European version of the Model 3, and then deliveries around February. And now we also know about the volume that Tesla is planning to handle who opened their mouth here? The International Car Operators, also known as HICO, at the Zeebrugge? Does it make sense? The Zeebrugge port in Belgium. So it's a huge port in Belgium that handles a lot of cars coming to Europe. And HICO is a focus on roll down, roll off cargo. So they are the one that handles cars coming in. And the issued a report that they are expecting 3,000 Model 3s per week starting in February.
So basically what's going to happen is on December 31st, the cars are coming off the line and people in the U.S. are buying them. And then January 1st, they're just all going to go on a boat. 3,
maybe not 000. All. 3,000 is going to be, at that point.
More than half of them.
You think?
Or about half of them, at least, are going on a boat. Because if they're doing 3,000 a week, and you know,
I think Tesla should be at least steady 6,000 at that point, maybe close to steady 7,000 at that point.
Yeah, so around half are going to go on a boat.
Yeah, that's fair.
Continuous, like
I mean, it makes sense at this point, and probably less than half going to stay in the U.S. because you have China after that. You have like other markets, so
yeah, that's. I mean, there's going to be quite a bit. There's quite a bit of demand outside the U.S. already. I wonder how far demand is going to fall off in the U.S. because it. I mean, literally anybody who's thinking about buying a Tesla in the next year is like, well, I should buy it now, even if my lease doesn't expire for 4 more months,
mm-hmm.
because you know I'm saving $4,000. You know, I think demand's going to be Q1 2019. Demand is not in the U.S. is not going to be very high for any Tesla, really.
Yeah, and it makes sense because I mean Tesla has been focusing in the U.S. with the Model 3 so much. I mean, last quarter, what was it? Was it like I think like 80 something deliveries, and 70,000 of them were in the U.S. and like that. So that's like never seen before for Tesla, like that kind of focus in the U.S. So it makes sense to well, it's gonna be very similar, I think, in Q4 now because of course of the
if not more so.
But it would make sense that now Q1 there's some focus on other markets, and I mean. Europe has been waiting a long time for the Model 3, so they deserve to get some kind of volumes, really.
Yeah, and we should note that there's also, and you know, this is part of what we were talking about before, there's also quite a bit of inventory vehicles out for delivery or out like on lots. Like I know, again, the Mount Kisco location near me, there's an offsite lot, and there's probably like 200 cars there, and you know, I know a lot of those are queued up for delivery,
mm-hmm.
but I think that Tesla anticipates people coming in around, you know, the last week of the year saying, you know, I heard about the money going away. I want a car today.
Yeah.
And
which Tesla doesn't really dumb do, but like maybe a day or two delivery. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a lot of paperwork, and it's also a reason why, you know, the dealers, the Tesla folks, have been overwhelmed these last 2 quarters with U.S. orders.
Last 2 years.
Well, last 2 years, but particularly the last two quarters.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
I mean, this quarter particularly. The reason I think that Tesla hasn't ramped up hiring is because they expect the demand to fall off a little bit. So, you know, why hire a bunch of people and then have to fire them, you know, next quarter?
Yeah, it makes sense.
So, theoretically, you know, maybe Tesla throws, you know, $3,000 rebate at us, or, you know, they have some other trick up their sleeve to keep demand high in the U.S. But
I think just word of mouth is going to be able to keep like a strong, steady demand. Just, I mean, the difference in time, like Tesla has to push to like, I mean, demand lever, Tesla has to push between like 2,000 cars per week to 5,000 car per week in the U.S. It's huge, like the difference. But like maintaining maybe 2,000 or 3,000 vehicles per week in the U.S. That's probably fairly easy for Tesla at this point, I think.
Yeah, and then they can. I mean, they can actually offer a lease
On the Model 3. Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, which you know kind of disguises the incentive a little bit.
But so I don't think they're going to do that with Europe now, right? With opening in Europe.
No, they don't have the supply to meet demand yet in Europe. I think they'll start doing that once supply and demand start equalizing.
Yeah, once they get through some of the backlog in Europe, they're going to be able to play with that. But yeah, other thing I should mention real quick about this thing with the Belgium port. IKO was looking, they said it's going to create hundreds of jobs, and they specifically asking for like light assembly work with the Tesla project that they're calling it. So it looks like the car going to be finished there at the port instead of going to Tilburg, which is the case for the Model S and X. So Model 3 is going to be shipped like basically done, and from there they're going to go directly to the distributions, the stores, and the, I don't know if they're going to have delivery centers there. Would make sense probably to have some. All right, so that's for the Model 3 coming to Europe. Keep us updated on when you start getting delivery dates and stuff for our European listeners. Tessa Samai. That's a good one here. I don't know if you knew this. I didn't know. Some of her readers let me know, and then I look into it, and sure enough, it was true. There was a conspiracy theory going on in the Tesla short community about the Tesla Semi program having some issues and maybe even going to die because the black Tesla Semi prototype. So we only know of two Tesla Semi prototype and a third test mule, but two like full Tesla Semi prototype. The silver one, which we've been tracking all year, it's been going around the U.S. As part of the test program. But the black one that was unveiled in November hasn't been seen since March or April, maybe April.
So what was this conspiracy?
This conspiracy theory is that the Tesla Semi black prototype burned down. Something bad happened. It was a thermal reaction and the vehicle burned down. So that was a conspiracy theory going on in the Tesla short community. And that was the reason why the truck hasn't been seen in months. And sure enough, this week, the vehicle shows up. Well, it showed up this weekend or late last week at the Tesla headquarters in Palo Alto. And then it drove down to, at least toward Los Angeles, because it was seen at the Kittleman City Supercharger Station in between the Bay Area and Los Angeles. And
hogging up five stalls.
Yeah, that was interesting, right? Because we've seen that there's a semi stop at a charging station, and they have some sort of extension cord contraption that plugs into several plugs in the Tesla Semi, some kind of 8-plug system, and then those plugs go into several superchargers. But Nader Asimi, who took the pictures of the Tesla Semi arriving at the Kittleman City Supercharger Station, said that he saw the vehicle plugging into five different stalls, which I think
so
was
interesting. So that's what, 600 kilowatt?
Well, I don't know if they can like pull like full power from each, but yeah, if they could, then that would be close to that. Speaking of the supercharger, in Europe, we're going to talk about it real quick because we already talked about it like the last few weeks when Tesla announced it. The CCS conversion, they are updating the supercharger there with a dual connector system. To have the CCS connector on the station, not just the Type 2. And they announced that, of course, because the Model 3 is going to be coming to Europe with the CCS only, so they couldn't use the current supercharger network. So Tesla needs to like start updating those and get them ready so that when the Model 3 arrive, they have access to the network. And they started doing it. We got some pictures from Roberto Di Gento at the... Don't make me pronounce that name, but one supercharger station in the Netherlands. they got the first one. So I assume that Tesla is going to be ramping those up because they have like 400 stations to update. And I doubt that it's going to be ready by the time the Model 3 arrives. But I mean, it looks fairly simple. It's just a second cable. They have to update the stall. There's a stall, not the actual supercharger unit.
Yeah, I think that black thing in the corner is just like a holder. Mm. And I have to say, like this, seeing both chargers next to each other, it kind of outlines why, having one company build a charger versus a committee build a charger is better. Like the committee CCS combo is just like a monster. It's like
The connector itself. I mean,
three or four times bigger than just the Tesla charger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big deal because you got to build like a bigger port on every car, and it's kind of ugly. And it's to me, it's a shame that more people didn't get on the Tesla bandwagon because it's a much smaller, more elegant solution. It's like VHS and Betamax. Like VHS was not the best technology. Beta was smaller, better quality, but it was just Sony's, and everybody else was doing VHS, and that's what won.
Yeah, especially since the Model 3 has so much of an impact because it's the highest production vehicle, electric vehicle to date. So it could like start a trend on which plugs to use, but it's basically done now. It's going to be CCS since it's going CCS in Europe. And I assume that it's going to come to the US at some point too. Just not now.
What is mildly exciting, I guess, is that the CCS combo to Tesla adapter should be coming out at some point. So that means that Tesla Model 3 owners, theoretically, or any Tesla owner, could go to any CCS combo station and get a charge. Although you can currently do that. Most combo stations have a CHAdeMO, and you can buy a CHAdeMO adapter for $450, which is kind of nice. Although I believe it still doesn't work on the Model 3. Model 3.
Apparently not, yeah. Yeah, hopefully that's going to be coming to all markets soon, because even here it can be useful for us.
Yep.
A lot of CCS gas station coming up. All right, we're going to talk about XiaPeng. We've been talking about them for a while now because it's an EV startup in China. Of course, there are plenty of those. But this one is interesting for a few reasons. First of all, they are backed by Alibaba and Foxconn, which mean tons and tons of money. So they are a company to watch for sure, just on the size of their pockets alone. But they're also interesting because they've been called a Tesla clone, or at least Tesla inspired. I've switched from Tesla clone to Tesla inspired in my own writing about them, because I think it's more fair. But they're definitely inspired by Tesla. The CEO, founder of the company, Enric Xia. Admitted that he had the idea for the company when Tesla decided to open their patents. So, I mean, it cannot be more clear than that he's being inspired by Tesla. And then you look at the actual interior of the car, and I mean, that's where I had the problem at first, because it's not just inspired at this point. That's the whole UI interface is like the user interface, complete copy of Tesla, especially the dashboard. Not the dashboard, I mean the instrument cluster. So I thought that was like kind of weird. But now this week, they officially, so that was when they announced the car. Now it went for sale. It's starting volume production now. They have tons of them and they are selling them. It's called the XPeng G3. And they updated the design a little bit. So the exterior doesn't look like the Model X. I mean, but the interior does a lot. I mean,
you know what's funny is that the UI design of the tablet, you know, interface they have is the old Tesla interface with all the icons on the top.
Yeah.
So it actually looks more like the old Tesla than Tesla's new version looks like.
Well, it looks like Tesla. Two things. It looks like you said, the old version of the software. But if you look at the interior, so the fact that the tablet's sort of is not completely embedded in the dashboard and it sticks out a little bit. That's like the prototype of the Model X. The original prototype of the Model X looks just like that. But then you look at the interior, look at the panoramic windshield. Looks exactly like the Model X panoramic windshield. I think Tesla had actually a patent on that, so they probably use that patent. But they use the same pretty cool way like with the Model X, where you have the rear view mirror cutout that works with magnets to pull the sun visor on them, because of the panoramic windshield, the visor also not in the roof but are in the side pillars, and they fold into that rear view cutout. So that's pretty cool, but like clearly compete on Tesla. The specs are not compete on Tesla. The specs are not that impressive, but there's a good reason why. It's cheap. So the spec, one permanent magnet synchronous motor with a maximum output of 145 kilowatts. They have, the battery pack I don't get at all. I don't have the specs for the actual battery pack, but I have the range that they are claiming from the battery pack. And they're claiming two different battery pack with two different range. But the range difference are 351 kilometers and 365 kilometers. What is that sound that keeps coming up? Anyway,
it's not me.
Yeah, I think it's me, but I don't see which device. I have too many devices in this room.
You got a phone somewhere that's beeping.
So that's 14 kilometers of difference. 218 miles, 227 miles makes no sense. Nine miles difference. I didn't get that. And also, that's NEDC, so we know that's not really accurate. It's going to be much lower than that, probably around like 150, 160 miles of range. But and they also advertise. So that they advertise the NEDC, then they also advertise like range at constant speed. But that's a constant speed of like 60 kilometers, so it's like nowhere near highway speed. And they say that with that you can do 520 kilometers and 550 kilometers. But I mean,
that's and it's weird that those two numbers are kind of close together as well.
Yeah. So the battery pack has to be like 3 or 4 kilowatt hours difference, right, in the capacity. Exactly. Makes no sense to me whatsoever.
And but, what's that? They have like a 360 camera on the top?
Yeah, they have some very advanced sensor suit for some autonomous driving capacity. That's something that we noted like a while back. I think that's when I first learned of the companies, when Julin Gu, I think is her name. She was a manager on the Autopilot team, and she became the VP of autonomous driving there, so... That's all I learned about the company like almost 2 years ago. But yeah, so we've been like bashing their specs a little bit, but at that price, you cannot complain too much. It's starting at 227,000 yen, which is around 33,000 US dollars. That's before subsidies. And in China and in some Chinese cities, you have like pretty interesting subsidies. The price can go down to less than the equivalent of less than $20,000 US. So, I mean, at that price, I'd like to try the car.
If you're going to copy a car, like the Tesla Model X isn't a bad car to start with.
Exactly. Exactly. And what I find crazy, though, so the exterior doesn't look nothing like a Tesla. The interior looks like Tesla. When Tesla first came out, a lot of people bashed the interior like it's like too minimalist, doesn't inspire a premium feel and everything like that. And since then, you've seen a bunch of people copy the Tesla interior, or at least copy the design philosophy behind it and go minimalist and everything. And I find that fascinating because of like the turnaround. I think that's the future. It's going to be the future. A much more designer are going to go toward maybe not like exactly the interior, but the design philosophy behind it. And I'm all for it because... Now, when I get into another car and there's like too many buttons and everything, I get a panic attack, really. We did that already. Oh, yeah, that's the thing I think we should mention really quick because it was cool. Tesla applied for a patent on a Google Glass-like augmented reality system for factory workers. And if you've been a long-time reader of Electrek, we had a cool exclusive report that was... done on Electrek, but in partnership with our sister company, sister website, Google, 9to5 Google. Stefan, that is the main editor there, had a great scoop about Tesla using actual Google Glass or another version of Google Glass that was an enterprise version, especially for companies, like a commercial version of the glass instead of a consumer version. And they were using it, and you can go on Electrek. We posted some GIFs of... how they were actually using it in the factory for the workers to share information and get like a user manual, basically directly information on the in their field of view while they were doing their work. So pretty cool stuff. And now Tesla patented basically technology like moving forward with that a few steps ahead, where they actually combined that with Tesla as improvement in computer vision technology, so that the system can actually detect through the AR glasses, they can see issues. The AI see the issues themselves. For example, we're talking about paint. They can, so the worker can see the issues and log them in inside the the network through the AR system. And with the information that you learn from that, so that the system detects what's an issue with paint and can learn from it, and then the system can itself detect, oh, that's an actual paint defect. So I thought that was really interesting. And Tesla says that the system that they patented has the potential to significantly increase the speed and efficiency related to manufacturing, and in particular to manufacturing of automobile parts and vehicles. So they want to use that in the factory. And it was interesting because when Stefan did that report, I remember Tesla commenting on it and saying that basically saying, "Now we don't use Google Glasses, even though we have actual videos of them using Google Glasses."
That was a little frustrating. Like we actually showed them the videos of them using, and there was like a Tesla on it, you know, like.
Anyway, and maybe. And they said that, and they were really playing it down. Like, that's not something we're really interested to. And now they have since applied the patents on the same technology. So maybe the hardware wasn't there then, and now like they used it, but they weren't happy with it. And now they think it's closer to being useful. I don't know.
Yes.
Have you used the HoloLens?
I have not. Any amount of time. I actually use Google Glass quite a bit.
Yeah, back in the day.
Right. Because
I use the HoloLens, which a lot of people say that it's the best augmented reality hardware today. But we used them at the Audi e-tron stuff, and I mean, I wasn't impressed at all. Like the field of view where I can actually see stuff is like very small, and I had to adjust the glasses a few times, so... I'm not sold on it, but I can definitely see in theory how useful it can be, for sure. Oh, Porsche. So Porsche is getting to be known as
the charger king.
Yeah, the fast charging king in terms of speed, with the Porsche Taycan now going to be available with 350 kilowatts charging. I know you posted pictures of them already. We've seen them at 250 or something like that, close.
Yeah,
to
I've heard that with the current hardware, 270 kilowatts is the real, like, that's the top, even though it's supposed to be a 350 kilowatt. But anyway.
But now it got up to 400 kilowatts at least, but not a Taycan. Maybe it's a, like test mule Taycan, but they didn't want to confirm that. But yeah, the research car, they called it. That plug on a new CCS charging station, a test station that can theoretically go up to 450 kilowatts. That's part of the Fast Charge Consortium between BMW, Porsche, Allego, Siemens, and a bunch of other companies that have partnered together. They are financed by the German government to try to push the CCS standard to higher charge rates. And they had their first test this week, with a BMW... with a custom BMW i3 with a 57 kilowatt hour pack, which was able to charge from 10% state of charge to 80% state of charge in just 15 minutes. But what was even more impressive was the... I'm just now seeing on the picture on the Porsche, it's all rusted. Yeah, that's weird. The test car is all rusted for some reason.
The black one?
Yeah. You see that over the rear wheel? The front left rear wheel?
I don't know if that's rust.
Looks like it.
All right.
Anyway, that car had a 90 kilowatt hour battery pack, and they said that they put the charging up to 400 kilowatts on the station, and were able to add 100 kilometers of range in just 3 minutes, which is really impressive. But that's a test vehicle, so it's not something that's going to be to market real right now. So we can still just expect more than 350 or the limited 350, like you just mentioned.
Also, it matters how long they can keep that charge. As EV owners know, that when you're charging fast, you get to 50% or somewhere around there, and the charge starts to drop off.
Mm-hmm.
Although Audi's e-tron got up to, 80% before it started tapering.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
So it'll be interesting to see what these companies can do.
Yeah, and speaking of Audi, which is part of the Volkswagen group, VW, apparently we're left out on this one, but we hear through the grapevines that they sent a bunch of press people at South Africa to test the, what's the name of that car? It could be the VW ID, the ID Concept, the ID Hatchback. They've been calling it the Neo, VW Neo too. So it's not clear...
The Polo, e-Polo.
E-Polo?
They have a VW Polo that kind of looks like that. Very small. It's like smaller than a Golf. Am I thinking of the right thing?
Yeah, I'm not sure. The car was spotted in South Africa. They're testing it, and apparently they are giving like press test drive right now. So we got some pictures of the vehicle. With some pretty heavy camouflage, and uh, I hope that the wheels are also very much camouflage, and that's not the real wheels because the real covers are quite bad. But I assume that it's just it has like similar cover in term of like cover for aerodynamic, but the design is actually different in the production version. They use that just for testing. I'm hoping here, but that would make sense. We also had some comments about the car from Jurgen Stackman, the head of Volkswagen brand marketing for sales and marketing. He basically reiterated what's going on with the car with up to 550 kilometers of range. But we also learned like a few months back that that's going to be the top of the line version. It's going to be sold with three different versions. So the base version should be, he says, the price of a modern Golf diesel. So the car is diesel, diesel size, but Golf size. So we would have a competitor to the Golf, which is of course a very popular car, and the diesels should start at around $30,000, maybe a little bit less than $30,000. So that's impressive, but that would be the base version of the car, not the top version of the car. Which the base version, they've been talking about the WLTP range of 330 kilometers, 205 miles, which is still pretty good. Probably a little less than that real world. Hopefully around 180, something like that. That would be nice. Still good for the price range, but not amazing either. Like, pretty good. And that's coming 2020. The timeline is weird. So I think they're gonna they said launching, unveiling in the end of 2019, but I think volume production is for 2020, and it's gonna be only for in Europe first. I think we're gonna wait a year or two before it hits the U.S. market. So that's the first one of the ID concept based on the new MEB platform from Volkswagen. They have a ton of other cars planned for that platform, and based on those ID concepts. And they announced that two new ones are going to be unveiled in the next few months. One is going to be a full-size SUV, luxury SUV, like, what's it called, the Touareg?
Touareg, yeah.
Touareg, so it's going to be Touareg-size SUV, so the higher end of the market for VW before you go into, like, the other Volkswagen brands like Audi. That's going to be unveiled soon. And it's going to be followed by apparently a beach buggy that's also going to be an ID concept, all electric. Probably not based on the MEB platform, though, because, like, it is.
Yeah, that would be kind of weird. Actually, we haven't seen anything like a beach buggy, have we? I think whatever that's going to look like has been kept under wraps.
You mean from VW, we haven't seen a beach buggy? Yeah. No, but we haven't seen really an SUV either. Those are going to be brand new concepts that are going to be unveiled, those two ones. We've seen a crossover, like the ID Cross. We've seen that, but that's much smaller. They're going to be a much bigger SUV size vehicle.
Any chance they just take an e-tron and, you know, make it cheaper?
It's going to be based on the MEB platform, so that the e-tron wasn't based on the MEB platform. So it should be... I don't think they're going to share too much technology on between the e-tron. All right, other new vehicles that were announced this week that are coming soon. Lotus confirmed that they're going to be bringing an all-electric hypercar to market and be ready to spend some bucks. $2.5 million with 1,000 horsepower. So they're going to try to bring a signature hypercar from Lotus, which is mean like lightweight, as lightweight as you can be with an all-electric vehicle. But, I mean, we know what Lotus has, like, had some weird insight into the EV world early on through their partnership, their manufacturing partnership with Tesla with the original Roadster. Looks like they didn't get the idea to do one themselves after the deal breakthrough. They probably thought, oh, didn't work with Tesla. Tesla wasn't going to make it. Well, we're not going to take the risk ourselves. But now, a decade later, they are working on the all-electric vehicle program. And that could be attributed to the fact that they are now part of Geely, the big Chinese automaker, which has been buying a ton of international brand, including Volvo and Lynk & Co and the London taxi maker. So now that Lotus is part of them, they are probably pushing for an all-electric hypercar program. Speaking of another company that's late to the game and doesn't have any reason to be, Infiniti, they announced today they already confirmed that they want to bring to market the first all-electric vehicle in 2021, which is a bummer considering they're part of Nissan, which Nissan was very early with the Leaf and never pushed Infiniti to have their own all-electric vehicle. But it's going to be a crossover, and they're going to unveil it in Detroit next month. So they released today the first picture of it, which is not really revealing, really.
Well, nah.
It looks very concept, like futuristic. So it might not tell us much when they actually unveil it. But that's going to be the concept on which the production car for 2021
going to launch. It looks like if you mixed a old Tesla Model S and a Dodge Charger, you would get this.
Yeah, it's hard to tell without the profile, like without like the lines on the profile, but I get where you're coming from with it. Hyundai, you just posted about that because Hyundai released the specs, well, pricing information and expected the EPA mileage for the U.S. market.
Yeah, quite a bit less than we were anticipating. We were thinking around 40,000 based on the price in Korea and Norway, and they announced base price, and it, you know, if you read the press release, they're saying the 258 mile version is going to be $36,450. So, you know, that seems like that, you know, if you take them at face value, they could always pull the, like, well, you know, the actual base model is only the 40 kilowatt hour one, which has a, you know, much smaller range. But I kind of think that the way that press release is worded, that they can't really get around that. So I think the 258 mile one is actually going to be $36,450, which is important because the Chevy Bolt starts at $36,650 or something, which is, you know, they just came in under the Bolt. And, you know, if you put this thing up against the Bolt, it kind of beats it on a lot of areas. Obviously, the range is longer, battery's a little bit bigger, motor's got a little bit more horsepower, it's a little bit roomier. It's got a wider stance. It's longer. Looks more like a traditional car versus a Bolt, which is kind of like they call it a micro crossover, but it's more like a tall hatchback. So, you know, you put this thing up against the Bolt, I don't think a lot of people are going to pick the Bolt, to be honest with you, even though I am a big Bolt fan. We haven't had a chance to drive this yet, but the people who have kind of put it up against the Bolt seem to like it a little bit better, at least in a lot of, you know, in many categories. And, you know, it's got a faster charger. It's supposed to charge at close to 100 kilowatts, although we'll see that, you know, later on when those hit the street. The battery pack at 4 kilowatt hour bigger is, you know, a little bit impressive.
Mm-hmm.
They use the same LG. But not, maybe not the same LG, but both companies use LG packs. So, you know, expect similar performance, I guess, which, you know, the Bolt has been pretty good.
Kona doesn't use the SK innovation?
No, I thought the Kona was LG. Maybe I'm wrong.
We'll have to check that. It might be right, though, but yeah, I agree with everything you said. I mean, at that price, I'd find it hard to go with the Bolt over the Kona, and especially now that the GM is running out of incentive too in the U.S. And so in the U.S. it's going to be like a no-brainer, since Hyundai is going to still has a ton of EV credit. So as long as that happens, I think it's going to kill the sale of the Bolt, because I don't think anyone is buying the Bolt without some kind of incentives. It's very hard car to sell at $40,000 without incentive, I think. But here, just because they said the starting, even though they announced that there's going to be a lower trim, they said that the starting price, so when you guys say starting price, you think that it's a lower trim, is going to be 36,000. But they do say pricing for older Kona electric trims will be announced shortly. So I assume that the pricing is for the trim that they are announcing now, even though they already announced like other trims. I think they could have been more clear about that, but because it has me worrying. But
so on the, I mean, like you can't announce a car and say 258-mile range.
Yeah.
And no. It costs $30,000.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So I'm pretty confident it's gonna be, but I wish they just like released everything because I want to know the price difference between the 40 kilowatts and the 64, because we know how efficient those cars are. So with the 40, for some people that don't need the range difference, that car could be pretty close to 200 miles EPA.
Right. It'll definitely be more than Nissan.
Like, I know it's not as efficient as the Ioniq, but the Ioniq has a 28 kilowatt hour pack. I mean, if the powertrain is similar, just a crossover factor, it's going to be easily over 180, I think. It's going to be close to 180, between 180 and 200 miles. I think it's going to be plenty for a lot of people. And if it's like $5,000, $6,000 cheaper, I mean, that's going to be tough for the Leaf. Because right. You're getting into the Leaf starting price range with the same kilowatt hour pack size, but then you get some thermal management.
Right.
That doesn't get. So, yeah, it is.
But the problem, though, with Hyundai is that they don't make enough of their cars and they really anti-sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only going to sell them in ZEV states.
Yeah, and starting just California, too. So, I want to see how that ramp up happens because they say just California, then ZEV state. And did he even mention non-ZEV state?
Yeah, they said other ZEV states and the Pacific Northwest, I believe. Which is not, you know, I think.
Yeah, they don't even mention non-ZEV state. So they say about beginning of 2019 in California.
Initial availability in California and subsequently in the ZEV focused states in the western and northeastern regions of the U.S. market.
So there's not even, they could never launch in non-ZEV state, which wouldn't be that surprising. So it's definitely a compliance car, even though it's a very good one.
Yeah. And then, you know, the Ioniq still hasn't launched in other states. And you can't even get them in New York. And it's been, you know, over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And New York's a ZEV state. Kind of weak.
All right, so, and that might be the reason why. The last article we're going to talk about, battery supply. So, securing battery supply is the most important thing in order to achieve volume production of EVs. Company needs to make sure they have the supply ready. It was a problem with Hyundai with the Ioniq. They said they don't have the battery supply to ramp up production. It was very slow to ramp up because of that. Looks like the Kona, like they weren't sure how much demand is going to be for it, so they didn't plan enough battery capacity. Daimler is trying to make sure they're going to have enough. They said this week that they issued over $20 billion worth of battery cell contract to support their EV plans. So they are following the lead of VW when they announced, like, oh, we have $48 billion of battery contract to issue. And they tried to secure the supply, basically, with different suppliers like LG. LG Chem and SK Innovation, which I think are the two main ones for Daimler. But also there's the Samsung is the eye of the world and the CATL in China. So we've been seeing a ton because of those kind of initiative of issuing a ton of battery cell supply contract. We've been seeing a ton of new factories coming up. We just talked about the new one from SK Innovation in the US that was announced last week. They also have one in Europe coming up. CATL is also coming up with one in Europe. Panasonic is increasing capacity of a gigafactory, so it's coming up everywhere, so that's very encouraging. And if you guys want to make some money, I will look into some minerals that they use in battery cells, because I think the demand is gonna explode in the next few years. Well, that's pretty much it for us this week. Thanks a lot, guys, for listening, watching on YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe and like the video if you did like it. And we're going to see you same time, same place next week. Thanks a lot.